97.1 FM Talk. On demand audio. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
Well, I am glad to be back, and I addressed this at the beginning of the show before the roundtable. You can always go back on the podcast or use the Odyssey Rewind function or check out the X, formerly Twitter, feed. But I ended up having to take a little bit of a leave of absence because of some mental health issues. And Sue, I know you and Fred and the team have been filling the gaps here. And I'll talk about it a little bit more when I'm a little bit more settled. And,
that's fair.
And I'm not, by the way, I'm not completely out of the woods, but it got pretty bad. And what I said earlier, you know, it's weird for people who don't have any experience with, and this is anxiety that kind of morphed into depression, and it was pretty bad.
Yeah.
And I have professionals and, you know, a team of professionals now that have been helping me. And I went through a lot of this in 2013 and never had a problem until I get back from Greece. And I'll never know exactly what happened. But as soon as I got back with those awesome listeners,
yeah,
I talked to one of my friends, Barb, who was on the trip. Barb and Ed were fantastic. They were the ones
that
were celebrating.
I know you really liked them.
And she's like
so
this
funny,
positive spirit. So what I did in the last few weeks is I reached out. You'd be proud of me. I reached out to the positive,
yes,
people in my life. All right. And it's not too hard to get more positive than me, but like I call Kenny Wallace. I'm like,
yeah,
Kenny, brother, here's where I am. And I wasn't afraid to talk about the depths of my darkness.
Good.
That were kind of surrounding me. But I'd been waiting to kind of feel like I was ready to come back. And, you know, I felt like today would be a good day because of the roundtable, and mm-hmm, it's a little bit lighter and easier. So far, so good. But it's a hell of a thing when people go through this. And, you know, now I've had two times in my life. I will tell you candidly, if you're power ranking life crises, right?
Yeah.
Divorce, I went through a divorce. That would be at the top of the list. When I went through this 10 years ago, 12 years ago, that would be at the top of the list. This may have taken
exceeded.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Because I never miss this much work. I mean, I've been gone, as you know, I've been gone for about,
yeah,
a month. And even leading up to the period where I took several weeks off, I was gone for a couple, mm-hmm, you know, like around Juneteenth, I had that Friday off and we had the holiday. But I took that whole week off because I was struggling that week. And then I kept trying to come back and wasn't working very well. You knew,
yeah,
because at the time I would end the show, I'm like, I was... It was torture. That's,
yeah,
all I can say. And sometimes this mental illness stuff, it's just torture. And it's very difficult to explain to people who have not gone through it. But here's what's amazing. And one of the things that sort of lifts my spirits, and when we have maybe a deeper conversation, maybe we'll take some calls on this next week. It is stunning to me, not as stunning as it used to be, because I've been telling this story for a while, how many people can relate. Maybe,
yes,
they can't relate personally that they've gone through something, but they know a family member. They have a son, they have a daughter, they have a mother, a father, brother, sister, or a friend. So it is not uncommon, and I haven't felt alone because I've had a lot of support. A lot of the listeners have checked in. I was being a little cryptic just because it's not fun to talk about, especially when I'm in, you know, the cloud that was hanging over me. But I've been working on trying to get back, and today was a good day, and so far, so good.
Well, I have to tell you, our feed is just full of people saying, please tell him, welcome back, we've been praying for you, we love you, we support you.
Well, thank you to the listeners, and I've heard from a lot of folks, and again, when I've answered, I've tried not to be cryptic. In some cases, I've said, well, a bit of a health issue, but in most circumstances, I said, mental health issue. And, you know, I know there's probably people out there because I used to be one of these guys 30 years ago. I remember thinking about things when I would hear people suffering from mental health. I'll use postpartum depression as an example. I'm like, what is that postpartum depression? That's a bunch of made up nonsense. No, it is not. So as a young, very naive, ignorant person, I had, you know, no sense of what mental illness was potentially all about. I'd experienced anxiety my whole life, and a lot of us experience,
sure,
that. But it's the degree to which this ramped up, which was unprecedented, unfortunately.
Well, it will make you more compassionate toward anybody when you go through something.
Well, and you know, somebody kind of challenged me earlier this year when we were talking about Simone Biles, because we were talking about the Riley Gaines stuff, and they were calling me out as someone who was not empathetic to her situation, and it's exactly the opposite. I was so empathetic to her because I knew how serious that must have been for an Olympic athlete of that caliber to say, I'm coming off the, you know, yeah, the exercises because I could hurt myself. The brain is a very powerful thing. And with anxiety in particular, it's the fear of the fear.
Right.
Right. It's
right.
Not, so anyway, enough about that. I'll talk about more. I'm not leaving enough time for my friend David Strom from hotair.com. We love David as a contributor. He's written about some really interesting topics here, even in the last couple of weeks. I kept reading, even though I was on leave. How are you, David, this afternoon?
I'm doing great. Can you give me 2 minutes to share my own mental health?
Absolutely, I will.
Because I understand perfectly, and I very much appreciate your willingness to talk about this. I mean, for me, it's every 7 to 8 years. There's an actual cycle that I go through. And, you know, where it just hits. And it sounds like for you, it's about 13 years.
Yeah.
But there's some sort of physical thing going on. I don't think that the doctors really understand it. They're sort of fumbling around.
I would agree with that. I've confused my doctors, that's for sure.
it's black magic. If you've ever dealt with a psychiatrist, you will know that what they do is they've got like all these tools in their toolbox and then they start throwing them at you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And sometimes you got to see which tools work. And I had a couple of tools that were working for, you know, those 12 years. And then I literally the second day back from the trip to Greece that I took, I was off and I knew it right away. And I was disoriented and things got worse from there. But let's talk about some things that are kind of interesting here. You wrote about Mayor Pete. And I pulled some audio from one of the embedded clips that you had on hotair.com because Mayor Pete, who is gay, of course, has, you know, kind of reiterated his sympathy, if you will, for parents who have concerns about fairness with the inclusion of trans girls in girls' sports. It's kind of one of those common sense issues. However, as you know, David, you got people out there reacting this way.
Not Pete Buttigieg. You too. And maybe I'm saying your name wrong, but everyone knows what I'm talking about. What the f***? And I know we shouldn't be surprised. Like, he's a white, cis, gay man. And we all know the theme of the good gay, right? We always are sacrificing in movements that are social justice based, like civil rights based. We're always sacrificing the most vulnerable.
Hi, Pete Buttigieg. I know you're watching this video. Why did you say that? Who are you expecting to want to vote for you by saying that? I don't really understand.
Well, maybe 90% of Americans, they wouldn't necessarily vote for him on other issues, but on that issue, they would.
Democrats think that the way to win the next election is by selling out trans people. This is Pete Buttigieg. He's a gay man, and he's the former transportation secretary, and he was mayor of a small town, ran for president, and now all of a sudden he's betraying his community because he thinks that questioning the fairness of allowing trans women in sports is going to give him a better shot at becoming president of the United States in 2028.
Pete Buttigieg did an interview where he said that the issue of trans athletes was a complicated one, and people are obviously rightfully calling him out because that's not true, and it's also transphobic.
So it's transphobic, of course. I knew that had to be in there, but it is really stunning how completely out of touch they are, those people in those clips, David Strom. And, you know, maybe there's a chance, I don't know, maybe there's a chance because I have gay friends who are outraged by biological boys playing in women's sports. Maybe there's a chance he kind of really believes that. He's not just saying it to run for president, which he probably is.
Well,
but, you know, there are gay people that feel that they're kind of in a lonely camp that agree with the rest of us, but they don't want to say anything. And Mayor Pete says something, and now he's paying for it with the fringe.
Well, what Mayor Pete is doing is he's straddling because he also says that, you know, well, boys should be able to play in women's sports. We should just be sympathetic to the parents who don't like it. So, you know, he's basically trying to I've been watching Mayor Pete because I have Democrat friends who are centrists who really like Mayor Pete. They find him very comfortable because he strikes that sort of nerdy, technocratic, on the one hand, on the other hand, kind of vibe that they like. They want that. They don't want the culture war. And what Mayor Pete is doing is he's trying to suggest that he's not taking sides in the culture war or even imply he's on the 80% of the 80-20 issue. But then when you drill down, he's still sticking with the T in the LGBT. And I think it all has to do with the lane. He's number two right now. Gavin Newsom is number one. He's number two in the polls for the Democrats. Gavin Newsom kind of played into this lane and found that it wasn't comfortable for him. You may remember that when he started out with his podcast and he said similar things, and you know, he took the heat and he moved back away from it. Mayor Pete is staking out this lane for the older boomer, non-leftist, sort of old liberals who just want to get past the culture war. They don't want to talk about trans kids. And I think this is what in legislatures they call comfort language. Mm-hmm. It means nothing, but it makes people feel a little warmer and fuzzier.
That's probably a pretty fair assessment of that situation, but I cannot see, you know, and I know they have to play to whatever this small fringe is. The Republicans have to do it sometimes as well, but I can't see the Democrat nominee for president in 2028 being all pro-trans and that working for them.
Well, those are two different things, whether they'll be that way and whether it works for them. I mean, you're right that it doesn't work for them. The problem is that you know, that what they need, and I'm not saying in terms of policy, but they need a Trump analog in the sense that they're willing to shake up the party in a very fundamental way.
I think Rahm Emanuel's that guy, but he's pretty establishment. So can he get out of it? But he's the guy that I would watch in all this because he's a common sense guy. He's certainly sharp politically. He's smart. And he's tried, I think, to maybe create some opportunities. But again, if that's, you know, primaries are different. You know that. Same thing with the Republicans. Yeah. You're not going to maybe have the best or the qualified person that comes out of it because they won't be someone who appeals to the fringy voters who come out in the primary. I want you to talk about the situation, though, that you wrote about from Baltimore. There was video that we talked about this case when it happened a while back. There were a couple of people who were elderly, 73 and 84-year-old, in front of a clinic that were pro-life. They were praying. This guy comes by and they get into it. Patrick Bryce is his name. And he just knocks this 84-year-old dude onto the ground. One of them is blinded in one eye. And what happens in the end here with so-called justice is this judge in Baltimore City does what, David Strom?
Well, basically, she lets him go. She gives him 1 year home detainment. And probation, I think, for 3 years or something like that. I mean, this is a 29-year-old man who confronted them. He went there to confront them. He got angry and he just beat the, you know, the excrement out of them. I mean, it was just,
it was horrific.
You know, I mean, he gave one a concussion, knocked him out, gave him a concussion. The other one, he broke his orbital bone, permanently injured him, blinded him in one eye. And the judge said, well, you know, he just snapped and he needs anger management.
It's really unbelievable when you if you haven't seen the video. I mean, Fox has been replaying it quite a bit today. And I remember seeing the original video. Sue, do you remember this case? Have you seen it?
No.
I mean, the guy walks by these two people and then he just wails on them. One goes to the ground. You even made this point. This is interesting in how we get this backwards a lot. In New York, David Strom, Daniel Penny can save a subway carload of passengers from a madman threatening to kill them all. And he's the one that gets charged. So we get this in these big cities completely opposite of where they should be.
You really are in this position. And it all goes back to critical theory and intersectional justice. They define, you know, who is the oppressor and who is the oppressed, not by what people do, but who they are in terms of characteristics, their race, gender, sexuality. You know, I mean, we all know this by now that, you know, if you walk into a room filled with liberals, what you really want to be is a transgender black person, you know, who you know, wears a doggy mask, and, you know, I mean, you can just go down.
Checks off all the boxes, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, it is now at the point where, you know, it used to be just sort of male and female, gay and straight, but, I mean, we don't know what a male and a female is anymore, right? And so, you know, I mean, there's just all these inventions, and there's a race to fit into some box. And if you fit in that box, you know, the liberal establishment will open every door for you and forgive every sin.
What do you think? I don't know if you've written about this. The topic I did not bring up in the roundtable is the gerrymandering and what's happening in Texas. And we have a situation here in Missouri, which is similar. We don't have Democrats fleeing the state like they are in Texas, but they're going to try to redraw these maps again. We have a supermajority of Republicans. Mike Kehoe, the governor, I believe, has heard from President Trump on this. President Trump is trying to obviously strongly encourage this in Texas. I have mixed feelings only because, you know, I don't think we should redraw congressional lines every 2 years. But on the other hand, if you look at the maps in California and in Illinois in particular, the way they carved this out, I hate to do the what about, but this is exactly what the Democrats do. They've probably done it in Minnesota where you are.
Oh, absolutely. Although in Minnesota, we have a fake independent commission, you know, because, of course, our entire judiciary is appointed by Democrats. And so they hand it over to Democrats. Democrat judges who have entire bureaucracies appointed by Democrats to do it. But, I mean, we're at the absurd level where Massachusetts Governor Maura Healey, you know, gets up. She's outraged about gerrymandering. And she says, we're going to have to do this in our state. Well, there are no Republicans representing Massachusetts in Congress. Not a one. You know, Illinois is one of the most gerrymandered states in the nation. You start going down the list, and Democrats have done precisely this many times in the past, where in the, you know, they get control of a state and they just redraw the line.
Well,
so.
That's why it's so funny. Yeah, that's why it's so funny to see J.B. Pritzker. And you can, I'm looking at a map of Illinois right now, which goes from right here across the river in East St. Louis. And it's a district that cuts right through sort of the middle of the state, all the way up through Champaign and Springfield and Decatur. You know, it's this, it looks like the path of a tornado or something like that. It's the weirdest shaped district that maybe you'll ever see in the country. But that's what they did to ensure that it was a blue district and not competitive with Republicans.
Yeah, and Jerry Nadler's district, you should take a look at that. I mean, there are all these districts out there that look like Rorschach tests. You know, the funniest thing to me about these Texas Democrats flying to Illinois is not just that it's one of the most gerrymandered states, that's sort of typical, but that they went there in particular because J.B. Pritzker owns, you know, luxury hotels, and they're getting a free vacation from J.B. Pritzker. That's why they're there. I mean, they didn't go, you know, it's not like they went to some, you know, state where they couldn't get wined and dined. I mean, it's just.
Yeah, and I didn't know that. That's very interesting. That is an interesting angle. David Strom, I got to wrap it here, but you're always great. I love to have you on. Thank you so much. Great work at hotair.com. And I appreciate you sharing your mental health struggles as well. Appreciate it.
You have a good one.
All right, take care, David. Thank you.
Get more at 971talk.com.